Hello, cyclocross friends, and welcome to episode 105 of Crosshairs Radio. On today's show, Mr. David Powell and Scott Diedenbach join me for another edition of They Don't Do That in Europe, where we're talking about the World Cup that happened a couple weeks ago in Nome. We're talking about the World Cup that happened just this past weekend in Hoogerheide. And we're talking about the World Championships of Cyclocross that will take place this coming weekend in Valkenburg. All of that on tap. But hey, did you guys see the release of the heat maps for Strava that showed all of the places around the globe that people are using Strava? And the thing that struck me the most about the release of this data and this information was, look at all of the people who could be saving money, who could be paying less on life insurance. And all they have to do, all of those people on that heat map, all they have to do is go to healthiq.com/cxhairs, take the quiz, the cycling IQ quiz, or maybe you take the running IQ quiz if that's the way you lean. You pass that, you qualify, you tell them that you're on Strava, you're one of those little dots on that heat map, and then you get lower rates. You save money on life insurance. Health IQ, they don't just generate leads and forward them to the insurer or an insurer. They are an insurer. They take the customer through the journey from when they submit interest in the company to starting an application, going through the underwriting to the policy in force. The policy is underwritten by one of their partners who is an insurer, but Health IQ is with you the whole way. Health IQ Advantage is their unique mortality model on the health conscious, and they have lower rates for health conscious people, like a good driver's savings on auto insurance, and unique underwriting, like replacing BMI with waist to hip ratio or cholesterol. It's all good stuff, and you guys should be a part of it. Take advantage of it. Get your little dot to mean something on that Strava heat map. healthiq.com/cxhairs. While you're on the internet, interneting, go to wideanglepodium.com and donate. Become a member. There are a lot of podcasts out there, and we so appreciate your decision to support us. And we want you to get your friends and your family to also be part of the Wide Angle Podium podcast network. So go there, sign up, $5 a month at the lowest, and up from there, it helps us do the shows that we do and to continue to improve the quality. Like I did for this upcoming show, I edited the heck out of this thing. We all submitted different recordings and it sounds like we're in the same room. It's an all new TDDTIE and it's coming at you right now.
Tell me when
Scott start the show.
All right, we are back for another edition of TDDTIE. They Don't Do That in Europe. With me, as always, on the left, Bill Shiken.
Hey, Scott.
That's it. after that big intro, he's like, there's a moment of silence. Hey, Scott.
Hey, yeah.
And of course, with us, joining us on the right, Mr. David Palin.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. As usual, I'm right.
Yes, you are on the right. So, guys, we skipped a week. We missed the we're playing a little catch up this week with the Nome World Cup results, but we're going to cover that, talk about that a little bit this week. Then do the Hoogerheide race that we just saw this weekend. Controversy all over that thing, and then we're doing our cyclocross worlds predictions. Does it seem like worlds? It seems like there should be like 2 weeks, like the Super Bowl, right? Between the last World Cup and World Championships.
They definitely go into it flying.
Yeah, there's no like boom, boom, boom. You know, two World Cups and then Worlds like in 3 weeks is that's a way to finish it off.
So. But you know, that's we are going to be able to witness that in just a number of months for 2018 USA Cycling Nationals point version 1.2, because will have two UCI double weekends rolling right into Nationals.
Is that schedule all like done, dusted?
Let's say it. Let's say if it was theoretically, and you had like ruts and guts going along with North Carolina, and then also I think Get Rad Cross. Theoretically, if you were to have those four races on the two weekends before Nationals, so you had people like Midwest, West Coastish, and East Coastish all with you know different races to choose to sort of get you know primed and ready for Nationals. Let's theoretically, if that were to happen, I think that's pretty cool.
I would think that'd be pretty
cool. That is cool. Yeah. That'd be really cool. Yeah. Kind of sort of the way that I just said kind of sort of kind of the way that, you know, everyone does the Nationals, kind of splits apart, does their own Nationals now. And then everyone comes back,
yeah,
does the World Cups and then does Worlds.
You know, it takes away unless people are going to skip those last UCI races, which I hope they won't, just in the spirit of, you know, supporting those late season races. You know, we don't have any more having to go away into a training camp before Nationals. You know,
right.
People can just keep
right.
Their training camp can be racing, which, yeah. I mean, more and more, I don't know. I don't know if I ever had a strong feeling about January versus December. I was fine with either, but just for that aspect alone, just that we're going to be able to, you know, have racing right up to Nationals, maybe it will make the season seem like one full season instead of, you know, I mean, I think we all agree that it kind of fell apart, not fell apart. It, there was not as much interest after Pan Ams in the rest of the UCI season in the U.S.
Yeah. And that's a usual thing. I see that feel that kind of every year after Cincy Louisville weekend, there's kind of a dip down.
And I think that part of that is attributable to Nationals being so far away from that.
True. I think that could
move
be
that up
it,
a
sure.
month, and hopefully, you know, that momentum can stay past that time, and we can.
Yeah. Plus, if people want, you know, people want to get ready for road, right? They don't want to have this lingering CX Nationals still to deal with training wise. They want it to be done, over with. Okay, now I can concentrate on my road stuff, right?
Yeah.
And so the new way will allow them to do that
for their gravel seasons,
right? Or their gravel or whatever non cyclocross thing they're doing. So,
yeah.
All right. Well,
they have to keep prepped for Worlds, don't they?
David, did you see on I think it was Twitter, it was Justin Lundin, possibly somebody like that, who was looking for intel on.
I did see that.
Yeah. Did you get in touch with him about Fat Bike Worlds? Give him the lowdown on the conditions.
Local racer Adam McIntyre actually got in touch with him, and I saw them going back and forth, and I figured Adam's from there. He knows better. And as much as I like Justin Lundin, because I like Justin Lundin, I don't think he wants my advice on anything to do with Fat
Bike. Well, tell the rest of us, since, you know, rumor has it this may be the last Fat Bike Nationals ever. What's it going to be like?
It's going to be cold.
Cold.
And there may be a touch of snow, but I don't think there's going to be a lot.
Yeah.
There will be some.
Although it's at the base
some,
of a ski mountain, so they do have snowmaking capability. I'll just throw that out there.
If I were up there and I wanted to run, say, 4, do you think that's too high of tire pressure?
Oh, I thought you meant 4-inch tires.
No, 4 PSI, 4.
4 is probably going to be right in about there, yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be 4. Maybe 5. But
you might want to go up. Yeah, I was going to say you might want to go up to 5.
Yeah, you're not going to bottom out those 4s, but you may be bouncing around there on the moon a bit. But which treads would you run? That's the real question.
Running slicks.
There you go.
With single digit pressure, you can run slicks.
Exactly.
Still get traction.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, Mountain Bike Nationals. I would go. I mean, fat bike. I'm sorry. Fat bike. Oh my god.
Don't get fat bikes and fat wheels confused.
Yeah, but it's the same weekend as it's this weekend, right? Same weekend as CX Worlds. I mean, I'm not going to... Last year it was, and I'm like, I'm not going to miss watching CX Worlds to go to Fat Bike Nationals.
Maybe
it's
that's
just not going to happen.
Yeah.
So,
I think that's...
You know? So, oh, well. All right. Well, do we want to talk about the World Cups, you guys? Or do you want to just keep doing this?
We could do this. Hey, speaking of...
All right, let's...
No, we weren't speaking of them. Go ahead. Never mind. Go ahead. We'll talk off camera on that later. Go ahead.
All right. Well, really quickly, I'm going to get to... We're talking about Nome. Remember way back to the French World Cup in Nome. The U23 men in first place was Thies Aerts. Second place was Jan Gross. Third place was Joshua Dubau. Fourth place was Yannick Peters. Fifth place was Johan Jakobs. And there we go. Did you guys see anything about this? I don't know what else we want to say about that. Anything else?
No.
Nothing on that one.
All right. Well, let's go to the... I still like getting those in there, though, because that's, you know, it's, we got to look at these names and see what's going
yeah.
on. So well, let's just go to the... Go ahead, Bill.
No, go on.
I was going to say, let's go to the women's elite race. This was the Katie and Katie Clinic, as I put in the lesson plan.
Yes.
What did you guys think? I mean, we obviously Katie Compton comes off U.S. Nationals with a dominant performance, and she turns right around, goes to France, flies to France. I think she was leaving like a day or two after... from Reno after, and just goes out and just crushes everyone. What was going on? What did you guys think about that?
I think that her plan should be, like, right now, she should be flying back to Reno.
Right.
Spending a couple days there, and then flying to Worlds. Because yeah. that definitely seems to be the winning combination for Catherine Compton.
Absolutely. And Katie Keough as well. I mean, like I said, I saw her in the airport at Reno when I was leaving, and you could tell she looked run down, you know. She
yeah.
just wasn't like she looked tired. And then she goes out, you know, by the next weekend, and there was as big a gap between her and third place, I think, as there was between Katie and, well, it was 25 seconds back to third place. So
yeah, Katie Compton's performance, if y'all haven't seen it, was just nuts. I mean, it's basically from the gun, and she's out there and does not look back and just clean race the whole time and just crushed the field. Just absolutely
yeah.
crushed
yeah.
them.
I mean, to...
David, were you going
to
say something?
Yeah, just to kind of look forward to the following week, which was this past week, which we'll discuss more in depth. I think what we're seeing here is her level of fitness is really where it needs to be. It's a top notch. Pull in health issues, you know, day of race health issues, and that's the only thing that can stop that woman at this point. It's obviously a very significant issue, but yeah, she is on top of it. So I get your point. I understand this like back and forth. She sounded really surprised if you saw the post-race interview that the jet lag did not bother her. She wasn't
yeah.
expecting to do as well. Yeah, that's always that part of fly in and just jump into a race before your body realizes how jet lagged it is or whatever. But I honestly think the lack of result in subsequent racing has less to do with her level of fitness, with just the level of allergens in the air.
Oh, I don't even think it was that. I mean, I think she just had bad luck. She got stuck behind a crash. She had a flat tire. You know, I mean, we'll get to
missed
all that.
Missed the pedal at the start.
Yeah, just, yeah.
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 Yeah. So also in this race, kind of projecting forward to what we know was going to happen the following week, is Sonny Kant, not a great race, finishing 12th. She did not look good at Nome. So I don't know what was going on with her, something wrong or what, but yeah, 12th place is really not what she's been showing. She did kind of have it. I think 12th locked up the World Cup for her, right? No matter
yeah,
what.
Yeah, yeah.
Once she got 12th.
Yeah,
so
both her and Vanderpool were taking victory laps at Hoogerheide.
No May.
No, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. No May.
Well, right. No, they were winning it at Nome, and then they could have sat out the last round.
Right, right. So that was interesting to see. All right. Well, so did I give the top five for the women? I don't think I did. All right. First place was Katie Compton. Second place was Katie Keough. Third place, Pauline Ferrand-Prevot. Fourth place, Helen Wyman. Fifth place, Christine Majerus. Go ahead, Bill.
I think it just further solidifies what we've said all year about the women's field is that, you know, Sané obviously did not have the day that she wanted to have, but it also shows the parity in that field and that nobody's running away from it week in and week out. It's not going to be like, oh gosh, we hope, you know.
Right.
You know, maybe if Vanderpool has a mechanical, somebody else will have a shot at winning, you know, that type of thing. It was always like you didn't know who was going to win going in, you know? I mean, this was a tougher gig for the Belgian bookies to figure out odds on the women's races than it is on the men's races. So, I mean, that's a little part of it. I don't know if we can necessarily say that Sané Khan is having a better or worse year than she did last year. I just think that everybody is so close together and you never know who's going to win from week to week.
No, I think that's a good point. And it goes with what we've always said, is that this is what makes the women's race so compelling right now in cyclocross, is this parity.
Yeah.
So it makes the podium hard to pick for Worlds. But all right, let's move on to... A podium that's not hard to pick, yes. For the elite men, in first place, Matthew Vanderpool. Second place, Wout van Aert. Third place, Tone Aerts. Fourth place, Tim Merlier. And fifth place, Michael Vanthernout.
And those are four and five, right? Those are the ones that are exciting there. It's like, oh, look at that. Tim Merlier, good.
Right. Yeah.
Good
and those
race
are the ones
there.
That are changing week to week, too.
Yeah. Michael Vanderpool finally showing up there. Lauren Swick, who had been up there, you know, pushed back down to six. So.
Yep. Exactly. So to me, the biggest thing, I think we have an email question if we want to cover it, is this was the race where Matthew Vanderpool overshot his pit.
Yeah.
You guys remember that?
That pit was chaotic. It was so small.
It was.
And just.
It was.
Just. It was a contra pit to start with, right? Wasn't it going the wrong way?
No, they were coming in from the left on that one.
Okay.
Oh, it looked like they were coming through the middle of the pit with the boxes on either side.
Yeah. So
is what it looked like.
So the crazy one thing with Vanderpool was that it almost looked like he was trying to make the pass in the pits. Like he started like accelerating through the pits and then got stuck. I think it was Swick or somebody who was and he like rode right by his pit crew and then forgot where he parked and couldn't find them.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks to me like he just has no idea where his pit crew is.
And
it's that simple.
We've talked about the rule before. Was it Wout that did it this year? And the famous one is Mariana Voss doing it years ago, where, you know, after you pass the first pit flag, before you get to the second pit flag, if you want to do donuts, if you want to like run up and down, if you want to do jumping, whatever you want to do in that space, it's kind of like you're free to do it, right?
As long as you're
not
on your
bike. Backwards, forwards, yeah.
In a UCI race, you can do it on your bike.
Yeah, and you do it on your bike. USA Cycling, got to get off your bike, but
right.
So him going backwards in the pits is no foul there. That's
right.
Something that you can do.
You can do it in the pit lane and in the racing lane between the flags.
Yep.
You can go backwards. Yep. The only thing in the rule that you can't do during all that is block another rider.
Right.
So like if you can't like hop off your bike, turn it sideways and force someone to go around you or something crazy like that. If you try and intentionally block someone, they'll gig you for that.
Yeah.
So, but other than that, if you don't do that, you can go backwards. We're going to get this question until the end of time.
Yeah, because it's crazy. I mean, it just looks
crazy.
It's like you should only be able to go one direction on a course.
So. Yeah. Yeah, right. It does seem weird. It does seem weird. So,
you know, the example that I kept thinking about when I watch that originally and then in replay, it's like when you're driving along and there's just a little bit of traffic, but you're in the middle lane and your exit's coming up, but you have somebody on your right side and you're trying to decide, do I kind of gun it and try to get around this guy to get to my exit, or do I try to let him pass me and then the people behind you are beeping and it's a big old mess? That's what we had there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, to me, this is what it says to me. I mean, you guys know, I've been bringing up little instances of stuff like this all season long with Matthew Vanderpool's pit, right? To me, it shows lack of attention to detail. They do not, you know, there was one race, I can't remember what it was, but I remember talking about on the show where the mechanic basically pulls the bike out from underneath him. And I was like, what in the world is that? So to me, this is a problem that when you get to the world championship stage, those things just get magnified. And I think that's been Matthew Vanderpool's problems the last 2 years. And I think we might see more of it again this year. So we'll see. So yeah, that's the main reason I wanted to.
It's really easy to just kind of look good when your rider is head and shoulders above the rest.
Exactly.
But, I mean, and right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so you know, you cost him 5, 6, 7, 10 seconds in the pit. It doesn't matter because he's riding away from everybody by a minute and a half. You know, so 10 seconds in the pit seems insignificant, but I think it at the world's race especially, these things become bigger problems. And you know, we could see it crop up again for him this year. So
yeah, it reminds me of how. Adam Meyerson would sometimes not get in trouble, would have people like, you know, getting on him because he'd be commenting on, you know, world elite level riders' techniques and how they could be improved, you know, like Lars Van
right,
Arf,
right.
Like Sars, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, people like, oh, like, who are you to tell him, you know, that he can improve right. his technique, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, well, you know, and this was when Lars was winning races, and he was like, well, he's winning. He was like, well, he could be winning by more, you know, if he
right.
if he's saving a
yes.
second here or two, if he's
yes.
if he's cleaner there or two, he could be up a couple seconds. And now we, you know, fast forward to now, and this is purely just anecdotal. This isn't like to say that Lars Van der Haar needs to fix anything, but that it's that type of thing. If he was saving those seconds, maybe he'd be further up in the standings and that kind of thing. And it goes to this too. You know, you can't, if you want to be at this level, you have to be prepared when things go wrong. And this is exactly what you're saying, Scott. Like, we see worlds the last couple of years when things went wrong, and he just he gets flustered.
Yep.
But then B, I don't think his support staff is ready to work with adversity.
Exactly. And I think if you compare that with Wout's team, it's the exact opposite. They're completely dialed. You'd never see this kind of problem. I shouldn't say never. Obviously, no team is perfect. But, I mean, they just have stuff much more dialed from what I see as far. And he's just the best bike exchanger in the business, Wout Van Aert, in my opinion. And you just never see these problems with them. So I think it's kind of a telling sign. So we will see what happens. I think it was Sean Kelly that people used to say that on the road racer too, that people used to talk about his weird position on the bike. I know Cadell Evans, people used to say that about too, because of his weird positions on the bike. And that was the point is, yeah, but they could go faster, right? They could always do better, you know? So, all right. Anything else you guys want to talk about the Nome World Cup? It seems like forever ago. We're kind of catching up with it, but are we good?
That was the race where, was it Francois Murray had a little issue?
Oh, I forgot about that.
We
want
to mention that.
Yes. The free Murray.
That seemed kind of significant
hashtags.
At the time.
Yeah, speaking of the aforementioned Lars Van der Haar.
Yeah.
Right. So in case people don't know, there was this instance where we didn't really see or at least I haven't seen what exactly happened, but the camera flashes over to it was actually between the flags, but it was the racing lane. And Moray is face down in the mud with his leg kind of bent backwards in the bike, in someone else's bike, right? And he can't get up, and he looks like he was like rolling around in pain, didn't he?
Yeah, I did.
I mean, I thought he was like rolling around.
Yeah,
in
you
pain
don't know
there.
If it's like pain or it's like
frustration.
Holy
or...
crap! My butt, my foot is stuck in somebody's wheel and I can't get it out. Yeah, I mean, it was kind of Vanderpool Van Aert round two from the World Championship. You know, in Zolder a couple years ago.
It was like the bike had him pinned in a wrestling match, right?
Yeah.
Except he was on his stomach. So the mechanics jump over. They start doing all kinds of stuff. They realize they can't get him out. They start cutting spokes, I believe, on the rear wheel, doing all kinds of stuff. Finally, they get him out. Someone hands him a bike. He hops on it and rides away like like nothing happened.
A candy bike, I might add, too.
It was a candy bike. I'm glad you noticed that because I noticed the same thing. And which is you know what he would have had to do is come back around with his bike back to the pit entrance, get the new bike, and then go out. He basically made a bike exchange in the racing lane, which you can't do. And I think that's the reason why he got relegated and disqualified.
But what did Vanderhaar do?
I don't know what Vanderhaar did.
Did they pull him, or he was just done, or what was the deal with that?
He DNF'd himself.
Okay.
But
he looked pretty angry when he went off course too.
Yeah, I think he's just flat. I mean, I think that he's trying to figure. He's a little bit of pressure on him. He's going home for world championships on a course that he has won on in the past and is not, I think, racing where he wants to be racing right now. So may have led to some added frustration there, plus having some guy's ankle in your wheel didn't help. But it seemed like he got a bike. I mean, he's not riding the one
with the wheel cut off.
And he can't exchange without... I don't understand how that works. I mean, he couldn't exchange his bike
Did he come back around through the pit entrance
if he went in the pit entrance and his bike is still back there, he should have been DQ'd, right, for being too far away from his bike?
That's a good point, yeah. He obviously didn't carry his bike into the pit with him.
Who knows?
Or, I mean, maybe since he just DNF'd himself, they just said, all right, we'll just leave it at that, you know.
Yeah.
It's the same outcome. So
either way, it was a pretty screwy thing. I need to go research Instagram to see if there are any clips out there of the incident from fans.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure there are.
We need that Zapruder.
So send them to us, would you please, fans?
You could just you could just download the video. Oh, you mean like behind the scenes videos?
Or because we didn't catch the actual incident.
Right. All right. Well, that's it. Anything else for Nome? Are we good? I think we're good.
I'm waiting for Mr. David Powell to make some pun about Nome, and then I don't know where it goes from there.
No.
No.
May we go on
May.
With this already?
No. There we go.
There we go.
Disappointed.
No, I was like, do I dad joke on this one or just let it go? And I was letting it go.
All right. Well, that was 2 weeks ago. This past weekend, we had, of course, Hooger Heide that everyone was kind of looking forward to, getting ready for it. Last time to see everybody on the world stage before the world championship. And it did not disappoint. So let's start with the men U23 because this did have a little bit of interesting results here. So top five in that race. In first place was Eli Easerbeet. Second place, Thomas Pidcock. Third place, Joris Nieuwenhuis. Fourth place, Toon Van de Bosch. Fifth place, Yannick Peters. So Easerbeet.
Got to go six deep.
And sixth place, Jens Dekker, friend of the pod. Eli Easerbeet beating Thomas Pidcock. I think this makes things very interesting going into Worlds, right? We've seen Pidcock winning pretty much most of the races that he's in this field. And Eli Easerbeet being a little bit frustrated with it, I think. And here we come, and he's able to beat him this week. So... anything interesting you guys want to point out about this?
No, I think that's a Joris in there, and I think Jens, who hurt his knee in Nome and then came back and I think was satisfied with sixth place, but still trying to figure things out to get to that form where that he was at at the beginning of the season, I think this sets up for a really entertaining Worlds matchup. Pidcock, you know, definitely the sensation of the season for that field and probably any. I mean, you know, we all knew he was going to do good things after winning Junior Worlds, but yeah, just jumping in here and pretty much dominating when he was in there. Ellie Easerby, you know, been there for a while, won the World Championships, so coming back to form. So this is really gonna be a good race in Valkenburg.
Yeah, I agree. And just looking at the Americans, in 12th place was Gage Hecht. In 17th place was Spencer Petroff. In 24th place was Eric Bruner. And that's it. So,
well, Denzel in 35th and Max Chance in 36th.
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry. I missed that. Woo.
Turn the page here, Scotty D.
So there we go. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what both Spencer and Gage do at Worlds. I think a lot of people over here will be watching for the two of them and seeing what happens there. So we will see. All right. Anything else, U23 men? We will move on to the elite women. Now, this race, all right, we got lots to talk about with this race. In first place was Sonny Kant. Second place, Eva Lechner. Third place, Evie Richards. Fourth place, Mariana Voss, who I didn't even hardly realize was out there till the very end. And in fifth place was Katie Keough. Kant, of course, gets the World Cup overall, like we mentioned. And Katie Keough gets the second place World Cup overall, which is amazing. Talk about consistent finishes for her at all the World Cups. Also, think back to Iowa and track, you know, and how good she was there, and she's carried that through all season long. So, you know, very deserved second place there for Katie Keough overall.
Yeah, and
comments.
Well, I mean, first off, just look at that. Look at the race that Katie Keough was involved in. She's in a group where she's racing Alice Arzufi, who's been super strong, you know, after winning Italian Nationals and on from there. Christine Majerus is there as well, just a second off. And then, you know, at the same time at the finish is Keough and Mariana Voss. So it just kind of a fun little group coming in there. And, you know, you mentioned Voss just kind of showing up here. And then all of a sudden, you know, what first race we saw in a couple of weeks ago, and it's like, oof, that's, you know, just sort of in the pack there, not looking great. And then all of a sudden here she is in the top five.
Exactly.
Coming into Worlds in her home country.
I think a lot of people put out there that, man, I didn't even realize that was Voss until she came across the finish line, you know, because she's wearing just her team kit. She's not wearing the national kit. Very interesting. I think that puts a very interesting spin on what might happen for Worlds. David, did you want to make a comment?
Yeah, and well, when we're talking about this race and who was in the race, when we're looking at third, fourth spots here, we have to skip over because they didn't finish. But PFP and Yolanda Neff, they were a significant part of this race, and they were really animating this race until they weren't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
No, we're definitely going to get them. One thing I want to mention before we get to, because I think we're going to spend some time on them, is first off, Ella Lechner, great season, you know, really comeback season for her. I think she ended up third overall in UCI in the World Cup points. And then also, you know, second place here, looking strong for Worlds. And then in third place, once again, Evie Richards, you know, just showing up when she wants to show up, and she hasn't been in a World Cup that she hasn't been on a podium.
Yeah,
or one.
She's amazing.
So yeah,
she's amazing.
First year in the elites and really showing that she is a force to be reckoned with.
Yep. And then, you know, the lady we've been mentioning, Celine Alvarado, she was top 10. Like we said, you know, there's all kinds of things going on with the elite women's race. That it's too bad, you know. Richards, I know, said she's going to race the U23. I think it's hard to see past her in that race, but There's still so many things that happen in this women's race. But David, I think you're right. You know, if you put PFP and Yolanda Neff in there, they probably would have pushed Voss back to sixth. I mean, they were racing up with Evie Richards, and they would have probably pushed Voss back to sixth at best. So there is that little factor in there. So
yeah, and I think that Katie Compton, we already sort of went through all of the issues that she had in this race. Give her a clean race. I think she's up there as well.
She's right up there too. Yeah. So in case people, she missed her pedal at the start. She ended up with a puncture, and then a lot of people were wondering. I mean, she was still in like top 10 at the last lap, right?
Yeah.
But then you started having her breathing issues and had to just kind of shut it down because it didn't really mean much to her at that point to just finish in the top 10 there. So we're better to play
it safe. The course changes that they put in there is such a huge penalty for missing a pedal at the beginning of this race because the traffic jam that happened
in the first
30
seconds
of this race. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, for people that don't know, in case you watch it, this had that fast straight and then an immediate sharp right turn right up a flyover that had a pretty decent angle to it. And in both races that we saw, there, you know, maybe what, 10 or a dozen riders get through, and then it gets piled up and you got people standing for 5 to 10 seconds basically out of the race within 20 seconds of the start. A design correction, you think?
I strongly think they need
to change in the future.
One could make the argument that you got to fight to get your standing in the grid and be up front, and that's how you win these things. But basically, after that first turn, the race is kind of over. Even if you're kind of mid-pack, you're a strong racer, it just takes a little bit of a pause, and the front of that race is gone. And,
right.
And even the very strong, there are some guys, obviously, that can pull it all back, but that is a rare thing. And it changes the race, in my opinion, and takes away from it.
Bill.
I agree. And I think that the best way to look at this is, you know, we were just talking about Evie Richards. Look at what she did when she won a few weeks ago. Where did she start?
Yep.
She was in the back. How much fun was that to just sort of watch her progress through the field? If she was starting in the back of this race, it's over. It's done. You don't get that excitement anymore. I mean, I'm all for, you have to have a course that at some point in it produces separation. You don't want 60 people coming through at the end of the first lap. That's just not how the sport works, and that's not going to be fun for everybody. So there has to be that separation, and it's going to happen, but this is way too quickly in the race.
And in my opinion, it's also very it's very distinct. It's not like, you know, we've had courses before where maybe there's a straight for a while, and then there's like a hairpin that turns back on itself, and every now and then you'd see a stump, somebody would stumble and it would bunch up a little bit, but it would only be for a couple seconds or something, and then it would all come back together. It didn't put you out of the race.
Well, with the incline, you were done.
And the last thing we need in the men's race is to allow the front runners to get farther ahead. That's the problem with men's racing right now in cyclocross. And the last thing we need is something that makes that even worse. So, which is what I think this did. So,
yeah, I mean, if you're super slick, you can defy a bottleneck. You can't defy gravity.
Yeah.
Right. Yep.
You know, I mean, once that momentum's gone and that flyover standing in front of you, there's really not much you can do.
right.
And as much as we love to see the real aggressive hole shots at the beginning of a race, when it's that decisive, you're going to create a situation where people are going to be taking untoward risks, and there's going to be bad outcomes.
Yeah. So along with that flyover, we also had this really exciting yet sketchy and, as proven, dangerous off-camber section on this course.
Early in the race, Ellen Van Looy goes down there and almost hit her face. I mean, I think she just managed to not smack her face into the ground. As that was just a single bike wreck right there, and she gets up and recovers pretty well. But then, obviously, I think it was on the fourth lap, we had Yolanda Neff and PFP. And go ahead, Bill, give us some thoughts on that.
Well, the biggest thought is that, you know, it looked awful. And PFP was high side, Yolanda Neff, and this is, you know, Arlie Kemmerer had the point that, you know, she, a crash happened, but she was like, well, she's sort of questioning the line that Yolanda Neff took, which, you know, in hindsight, yeah, everybody's going to agree that she shouldn't have been on the low side of her, but at the same time, you know, you're sort of expecting everybody to be able to stay upright. So she sort of cuts under Pauline at the beginning of this big, really super steep and super, you know, it's one of these courses that we love because it's so wide. You know, there's
yeah,
it's a good 20 meters from like top to bottom, you know, a huge amount of room to maneuver in there until things go wrong, you know, and for Anne Prevost, she got it wrong and just lost control and started sliding down there and took out Yolanda Neff on the way and seeing it. And it's really, I mean, it's pretty awful looking because you can see, Ferran Prevot really putting all of her weight onto Neff's, you know, shoulder and arm when she comes into her. She basically lands
when
on
she
her
falls, yeah.
And drives her, sort of pile drives her into the ground. PFB turns out, you know, bruised ribs, definitely, you know, knocked around and not feeling great, but nothing broken. At first, it seemed like Yolanda Neff is in the same situation. She gets up. She actually goes over and basically at that point, I think even she thought she's abandoning the race because she wants to make sure that Pauline is okay.
Yeah.
And she's over there sort of comforting her. It turns out she had a broken, you know, Yolanda Neff had a broken collarbone and then also, you know, some fractures to her elbow as well. I mean, really messed up from this crash. And I just... Can you think of a time in recent history where somebody has been this badly injured in a elite level, you know, World Cup level cyclocross race?
I mean, the only thing I can think of is Tone hitting the tree.
Yes.
Yes.
That's a good
Last
one.
Year.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That'd be about the only thing I can really think of. I mean, obviously we had the scare when Matthew Vanderpool kind of knocked himself out there, but he was fine.
Knocked himself out. And then also Worlds. Didn't Arzufi, wasn't it?
Yeah, she hit her face and had all that
blood.
It was
the same place last year, wasn't it?
Yeah. But the thing is, so we've mentioned three or four. You know, for the most part, you know, especially compared to road, you don't see that many of these, like, serious injuries from cyclocross at the top level. I know everybody's going to tell me now about all the injuries that we're missing, but, you know, at least this stood out and which stinks. And this is why I wanted to like say that what I had to talk about was more big picture. What stinks about this is we have two of the best racers out here who are not necessarily in their primary discipline.
Mm-hmm.
Yolanda Neff is world champion cross country mountain biker.
Right.
You know,
right.
Pauline, who knows? She's won world championships in everything. Her primary sport is tough to say, but it seems like if you were to really pin her down, it's I'd say maybe mountain biking.
On roads, I think either one prior to cross.
And what leaves me the most sort of, other than wanting of being sad, because it's always great watching Yolanda Neff race mountain bikes, and she had a late start to the season last year because she was hurt, and now she's hurt again, going to miss the opener in South Africa, and that's a big blow for that sport, is that I hope that this doesn't mean, you know, if you're like, now a top level rider, if you're the manager or team of a top level riders, are you going to be saying, let's not do cyclocross? Let's stay away.
That'd be a real shame.
You know, yeah. that's yeah. what I see from this. I see, you know, somebody like her really just hurting her primary. I can see sponsors from her mountain bike team saying, let's just, you know, this was cool that you did this cyclocross stuff, but we're not getting so much out of it. And, you know, this isn't a good result for us in any way. And that's my fear. And I think that we see that on the men's side a lot of times, especially after Stibar again, you know, he's another one. He got injured racing cyclocross. And I think after that, Quick Step was like, we're just not going to do that anymore. Yeah. that's part of like the sort of the fallout from this, I think, other than the injuries itself, is that I hope it's tough being sort of the low sport on the totem pole, which I think cyclocross is. And people are always going to move away because of money and whatever else. And now if they're saying, oh, well, it's a dangerous sport, which is still, you know, numbers wise, I'm not sure it is. Are we going to be losing people because of that? And I hope not. And especially in the women's field, because that's the field where we get that diversity and we get so many athletes from so many disciplines coming in and excelling at, you know, Thalita de Jong is a road racer, won a world championship. You know, I mean, that kind of stuff happens in the women's field, which is awesome. And it just brings, you know, as I said, diversity and a little extra action. And, you know, you're not really sure who you're going to see. You got Marianna Vos showing up, you know, that kind of stuff. And that's, I hope that doesn't go away.
I agree. I think the influx of the other disciplines, especially mountain biking, have certainly added to the excitement of cyclocross race. I mean, Evie Richards is another perfect example. You know, I mean, she's just been amazing to watch all the way down the line. I mean,
look at cyclocross nationals here in the U.S.
Yeah, with Blevins. What Blevins does in the U23. I mean, he was the most exciting guy to watch in that race, I think. And you know, my take on the crash itself, I basically agree with you, Bill. I mean, I think, you know, I know I've heard a couple people say NEF kind of takes away PFP's bailout line, but I'm like, well, I think that's a lot to ask to say that NEF should have to predict that, because when Prevost goes up high, a lot of people were going up high and staying high like Richard was doing, until they got all the way through the sand at the bottom and then kind of coming back. So I think asking NEF to kind of predict what PFP was going to do there is a little bit much to ask. At the same time, I think she does come from behind her and kind of takes that line. So, you know, there was that issue too. And then, of course, you know, PFP's wheel just slid out, you know, so that was not really something obviously that she had planned. So I think there's no blame for anyone on this crash. This is just one of the things that happens when people are racing hard and we're seeing very high level riders, you know, riding at the maximum of their abilities and at the limits of their abilities. And I think, you know, is very unfortunate. I'm glad at least PFP isn't hurt. And it's too bad that Yolanda Neff got injured, but I think it was kind of a crash. It was just kind of a cyclocross crash, and there's not much, no one really at fault or anything like that. And I'm glad we haven't seen a lot of that on Twitter or anything, so that's cool, because I don't think there's any blame for anyone there.
Oh,
so.
No, and just the opposite actually happened. Remember the finish line incident where Stibar put Jan de Nieuw Willare into the barriers.
Oh yeah,
basically crashed him out and took the win. And the next day showed up at Jan's camper with the sorry cake, with the cake written you know, with sorry on it. We had and Taylor Jones is the credit for this pointing this out. We had sorry pizza that was delivered. There was a conciliatory pizza between PFP and Yolanda Neff.
Nice.
We saw on Instagram.
Nice.
Yeah, so sorry pizza has now
sorry pizza
taken over for sorry cake.
No, there was Tyler Cloutier, our Canadian, involved in that, because I know that they're really big with sorry there.
They're more into sorries than sorries.
Sorries than sorry. David, did you want to throw in any thoughts on the crash? You haven't really had a chance to say.
You guys
yet.
Are talking so much, and I was trying to throw a word in edgewise. But ultimately, I think what it comes down to, and you and I have spoken a little bit about this, and we did a Zapruder analysis at the shop yesterday, going through frame by frame. At that level, you're racing full on for every advantage. So we tried to say, okay, Yolanda Neff shouldn't have gone and taken that line. Then you look at it again, that line was open. She wasn't forcing her way into it.
Right.
She wasn't. It wasn't a dangerous line. And I mean, how much are you going to, when you race, say, what's going to happen if that person beside me I'm trying to race around has some type of a failure? You just don't, especially at this level.
Right.
All you're thinking is, I got to get there. There was no, at some point there was, especially at kind of full speed, there was initially some question about, well, maybe, PFP was cutting her off, coming across in front of her line. But every time I look at it, I don't see that as what was happening. It was truly just a failure, as she was sort of like, she failed at that high line as that front wheel went out.
Right.
It's just very unfortunate, as we've all said, it's unfortunate that it resulted as catastrophic as it did, but it's just part of racing.
Yep. All right. And I think and it's too bad, because I think Neff has gotten stronger as the season has progressed, and I think she would have been a force at Worlds for sure, and would have been very exciting to watch.
We saw her like in these early season cyclocross races where she was just sort of out there on a lark, just having fun and sort of, you know, and it's great when you get these, like these, you know, top level athletes who, and I don't know if this is what she was thinking, but obviously the results sort of pan out. They're not good at just riding around and having fun.
Right.
You know, I think they
if they're there, they're going to try and win.
Yeah, all of a sudden it's like, oh, I can win this. And then she's out there, you know, competing at the World Cup level, which, of course, you know, nobody's surprised that she can. But, it, you know, it just started out. It's like, oh, look, Yolanda Neff's in, you know, EKZ race and doing this and that. And then all of a sudden, all right, I'm going to try to win Worlds.
There. It wouldn't be the first time.
Yeah, which is awesome.
Right.
And that's what, and that's exactly. Kind of my whole, you know, my whole hand-wringing that I hope that continues, and I hope we get even more more crossover from the women's cross-country mountain bike scene into cyclocross, because both of those fields, I think, along with women's road, are the most exciting out there right now. So it's fun to watch them sort of mix it up in different disciplines.
Totally agree. So let's move on. Also in Hoogerheide, there was a men's race too, by the way.
Was there?
Did you guys know that? Yeah. Top five.
There was a cool like ride around that looked like
there was
you know,
men's field.
Yeah.
Top five for the men. First place, Matthew Vanderpool. Second place, Wout Van Aert. Third place, Michael Vanternout. Fourth place, Lauren Sweek. Fifth place, Kevin Powels with something to prove. Gets a top five finish in the last World Cup at Hoogerheide. So.
Nice
anything
way to end
spectacular?
The season, huh?
Yeah, anything spectacular about this race that anybody wants to mention? A lot more of the same, I think, kind of in many ways.
Yeah,
yes?
I just, from a symmetry sense, I like that first place was Matthew Vanderpool, and then second through seventh were Belgians, and then eighth place was David Vanderpool.
Right. Kind of like sandwich, a little sandwich there.
Belgian
isn't it
sandwich.
Telling that we have to dig that deep to find something interesting about this race?
Yeah.
Well, let's talk. Stephen Hyde does finish 22nd for the United States. So there's that. And I think he was the only American. Oh no, Kerry Werner was there. Kerry Werner actually had a really good start. Did you guys see that? He was off. He was on the left side. He actually did not get caught in the pinch at the flyover. Really, he was kind of right on the edge of it and managed to sneak through it on the side. He's so easy to see because of his colorful, jersey and the fact that he occasionally wears space pants. But you could see him get along the side of that and get through that. So that was nice to see. He did get a pretty good start there. So,
You know, anything else? I don't want to like come across as negative or keep harping on you know Vanderpool's dominant wins, and even look, Wout Van Aert beat the rest of the field by over a minute.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and so people were like, oh, well, it was a really good battle for third. They were a minute and 33 seconds off of second place. It's not, it's like, I guess, and even Kevin Powell's are like, oh, redemption, he got fifth. Right. They hired Kevin Powell's to win races, not to get, not to get fifth. So let me
throw this at you guys. Is it time to do picture in a picture? You could have a little frame off to the bottom left that shows
Matthew Vanderpool,
and occasionally flashes back between he and Wout Van Aert, and then you show the exciting racing that's going on behind them.
But here's the thing: is that this is where us North American cyclocross nerds, and I'm sure we can probably throw the UK in there as well, look at the sport a lot differently than the Belgians look at the sport. They don't care.
Yeah.
They are worried about who's winning the race. They're worried about their guy. It is Ricky Bobby over there,
Yes.
It's first loser.
Yeah.
And they don't care. And they're not going to change. And they're not going to change the way the broadcast is. And people are like, oh, well, it's better for their sponsors and this and that. Sponsors don't care either. Sponsors want a winner,
Right.
So it's all of these arguments that we want to see it are never going to fly for Sporza or whoever is broadcasting that race, because it's all about the front of the race. That's it. It's competition. It's a race. That's what you're going to get. It's not an exhibition sport. The only thing I got out of that race was you look at that course, other than the sketchy off camber section, the smoothness of that course and watching Vanderpool race on it. That was like the most envious I've been of wanting to go out and race on a cyclocross course. Because it looked beautiful, and just how he was like flowing through that course and just flying over it, you just sort of like put yourself in his shoes and like, oh, that would have been fun. So that's what I got from.
I'll tell you what else was really nice was the coverage. Did you see that opening shot? It was along the finishing stretch, and then they had like a boom camera or something where they had the whole starting field, and they were above them with the camera. I was like, wow,
that is really cool. For the camera and video nerds on Twitter, we were all just waiting with bated breath for when they were going to use the cable cam next.
True.
That was
whatever happened to the Dave Ave, and I know this was not a Dave Ave race. Keep the letters coming, but whatever happened with the drone?
I don't know.
This would have been another good place to bring the drone aboard.
Yeah.
Yeah, so going a little bit deeper in the men's field, I don't want to leave out. In 43rd place was Jack Kisseberth. In 48th was Jeremy Powers. In 49th was Eric Thompson. In 53rd was Cody Kaiser. And in 66th was Tyler Cloutier. So I know we didn't mention the entire U.S. women's field, but that was just because I forgot. So, okay.
I will say I am a little disappointed in the. I was hoping for more of a head-to-head battle. Since we weren't getting Matthew Vanderpool and Lauren Swick as much at the front. I was really hoping for that David Vanderpool and Dieter Swick battle. I wanted the other brothers to be fighting it out, but.
We should have been tracking that all season.
Yeah, and David Vanderpool got eighth, and then Dieter's down there in 22nd riding with Stephen Hyde and Tom Mason.
That would be a good award for Wide Angle Podium to give.
Yeah, the best brother coverage. The 1-2 team, the Maliazzi crunch.
Here's one, just looking through the... Here's an interesting one, just looking through the... Philippe Orts. Who's now 23, so he's an elite, finishing 16th. So, breakout race from him at Worlds last year. Spanish rider, still in there, still getting top 20s in the World Cup. So that's cool to see.
Absolutely. Yep.
Grabbing
that is cool.
For straws.
No, but he was very fun to watch at Worlds, and he's a good guy to be following up on, for sure.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we got to do our world's predictions, guys.
Yeah.
Bill, did we want to do any email questions or anything to break this up, or you want to just go into doing that?
Well,
it's up to you.
Let's do this, since this will be we were sort of set up in our email questions. This will be a good lead in, and we can even start with the men's for our men's elite for our world's prediction, since they're the maybe the most boring ones. But going into that, looking at the Americans that were picked, we had an emailer who wanted to know what our thoughts were about Anthony Clark not making the team over, and and Cody Kiser and who am I forgetting?
Tristan Cowie.
Oh no, yeah, Tristan Cowie, who both ranked below. Is that correct, Anthony Clark? UCI rankings,
yeah.
Yet making the team over him, and what our thoughts were on that decision.
Yeah. So, Bill, do you want to
give
our thoughts?
Thoughts on that decision?
I'm asking the question, so you all have to answer it.
Go ahead, David.
Oh, shoot. I was hoping that you'd just keep going. Part of this comes down to... we give the USAC, there's some, it's not just a points only thing that they
have.
These
are discretion. This is a discretionary
discretion. Yep. Thank you.
Right.
Yep. And there's a reason for that. And I have to say, I'm a New Englander. I really like Anthony Clark. I think he brings a lot to the table, both in his racing and in his personality and his excitement and exuberance. Perhaps not in his spelling, but okay. He's a good guy, and really there's a very strong argument can be made that he should be there. That said, when you look at quality of racing, quality of races that where he garnered those points, that's where I think you'd knock him down maybe a little bit here and there. I'm glad I didn't have to make the decision.
Yes. I mean, I agree. I think you could certainly, it is discretionary. You could certainly make the argument that Anthony Clark could be there. The other thing is Anthony Clark wants to go, right? I know your ability to, when you're in the discretionary picks and your ability to pay for it and your, how much you want to go, comes into play. So Anthony Clark wants to go too. I know we talked with him at the party after, he was talking to Dave Sheik. I was kind of on the side, but he was talking about how he was really hoping he got selected, and he really, really wanted to go. So there is that factor too. Anthony Clark has got a 65 UCI ranking. Cowie is 85, and Cody is 85, and Tristan Cowie is 108. So that's quite a big, that's over 20 riders difference. But I think you're right. It's a discretionary pick. They look at a lot of factors. Anthony Clark did not have a great nationals race. I think they put some weight on that. And that was the decision that they came to. I think you can argue it both ways, but I think there certainly is an argument for Anthony Clark being there. Bill?
Well, if you look at the Pro CX standings, and I can say with great confidence that this is the first time this season I am looking at the Pro CX standings. I had to make sure they such a thing still existed. Congrats to Tobin Ortenblad for winning, being the top on the Pro CX, I guess. Kerry Warner was second. Steven Hyde was third. Okay, I'm giving you those three to kind of maybe make a point here. Those are your top three in the Pro CX. Tobin Ortenblad, mm-hmm. Kerry Warner, Steven Hyde. All right?
Right.
Cody Kiser is ninth. Anthony Clark is 14th. Tristan Cowie is 17th. So we go by the Pro CX. We say, well, Cody Kiser obviously is ahead of Anthony Clark. He deserves to go to Worlds more. Cody Kiser deserves to go to Worlds more than Anthony Clark. Well, Tobin Ortenblad and Kerry Warner are both above Steven Hyde. Do they deserve to go more than he does? I think the Pro CX, if this is what USA Cycling is looking at, and I think it is definitely a factor that they're taking in there, this thing's kind of skewed a little strangely, I think.
Uh-huh.
And where Anthony gets dinged is that he is racing out of the United States for a lot of the season. He, his Squid Squad raced in Australia. They raced in China. they raced in Japan. All UCI races. They're doing all UCI races in these places. And that's where he's getting these points, and that's why he's ahead of those other two riders. If you're getting dinged for racing outside of the United States, I think that's a bad policy. Because I think that's what we want. You know, I mean, we want people racing everywhere. If it means, yes, personally, we'd love to see Anthony racing in the United States, but that him and his team choose to race elsewhere in the world is awesome. And it's great experiences for them. And that's another thing that, you know, take advantage of that. If they have the opportunity to do that and you're racing your bike and making like next to no money, take advantage of the opportunity to see the world and also get UCI points. So that, I think it's a really tough call. I agree. You know, nobody's going to say that Cody Kaiser and Tristan Cowie shouldn't be on the world's team.
Right.
Nobody's saying that, you know, and it's like, do we have the spots available? I don't know. I agree with you that I think it is a hard decision. I just hope that part of it, he was not penalized somehow for not racing in the United States. That would be the point that will land on.
Yeah, that would be bad. I think some of it too might just be that Anthony was on the team last year.
Yeah,
you know, and if you kind of have this love, these three guys kind of all equal. Well, he got to go last year. Let's let these guys go this year. If everything else were equal, you know, let's just try and balance it that way too. Might have gone into it.
It's not a participation sport at this level, though. It shouldn't be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say that Lauren Swick was 21st in the Pro CX.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
However, not first non-US guy. That would go to Michael Vanden Heuvel, who was 12th.
Oh, of course. Of course. Should have known that. All right. Well, do you guys want to go and pick our elite men's podiums?
Sure.
Four worlds.
Yeah.
Four worlds. Yeah.
All right. Who wants to go first?
Go ahead, Bill. Go ahead. Give us your picks, and then I'll tell you where you're wrong.
Okay, that's we're starting with our men, right?
Yeah.
Yes, elite men.
Okay, I am going to say,
who could it be?
Yeah, I mean, this is just like there's nothing interesting here. This is
hey, should we go full on like slow ride pod and do it as a draft?
No,
because we can all pick the same if we want.
Yeah,
all right. these are just your picks.
Yeah, okay. These are just my picks, and my picks are going to be Tone Erickson third, Wout van Aert in second, Matthew van der Poel wins. Creative, right?
Okay. So Tone in third,
mm-hmm.
Wout second?
Yep.
And MDVP. MVDP, I'm sorry. David, you're not racing.
No, MDVP will be sitting at home for this one.
All right, David.
All right, so here's the argument, and you guys know where I'm going with this because I'd love to pick him as first, but I'm going to put him in third.
You're going
to
pick Lars Vandehaar.
Lars Vandehaar, and I'm going to come back to that in just a minute. Lars Vandehaar third, Wout van Aert wins, and Van der Poel comes in second.
Nice.
So here's the Lars Vandehaar wins argument. And one is because I really like the guy. We've always talked about that. I've always wanted him to win, and therefore he should win because I want it. But I was listening to none other than Renat talking about this.
Uh-huh.
Here's a scenario for you.
Is that on one of those other cyclocross podcasts that seems to be popping up all over the place?
Yeah, everybody wants to be just like the three of us. I'm not sure why.
I know.
They saw us making all this money hand over fist, so they figured let's jump in with the gravy train.
We're like cryptocurrency, but for a cyclocross podcast.
Exactly. So here's an argument. Vandehaar goes off real hard at the start and gets off the front. Now, Van der Poel looks and says, hey, he's my countryman. You chase him down. And Van Aert says, you've been the winner all season long. You chase him down. And the two of them play games. and Lars Vanderhaar gets out of it. I'm not so sure that works. I come back to, I like Lars Vanderhaar. I would love for him to be on the podium. I'll pick him as third. And by the way, this is a course that he's done very well at, and he's beaten each of these guys on this course.
Yeah.
Still not enough to win it, I'm afraid, but I'm going to put him in third here.
All right. Well, so my
Which
top
brings
three,
us to you, Scotty D.
Yes. I'm going to go with my top three. I have in third place, Tone Aerts. In second place, Lauren Sweek. And in first place, Wout van Aert.
Nice.
What happens to Vanderpool?
Going for the meltdown.
Exactly. I think until Matthew Vanderpool wins Worlds without and doesn't melt down, I'm going to continue to pick Wout. I think we could see something happen. And if that does happen, I don't. He might not even be on the podium. So I'm going with that. I think Sweek has been riding. There's been instances where Sweek's riding with those guys, at least as fast, you know, in the race. Vanderpool goes, I think, you know, he gets this huge speed at the start, this huge burst of power, gets a gap, and then that gap kind of stays the same. And I think the other guys, as the race goes on, are able to oftentimes ride the same speed with him, but it's too late because he already has a 45-second lead. There's also races where they can't touch anything that he does, and he can extend and extend and extend all race long. So if that happens, Vanderpool walks away with it like he's been doing all season long. But these little problems, I think he has nerves that he has to deal with. He gets nervous at Worlds. There's going to be a ton of pressure on him. And we haven't seen him handle pressure well. So until he does, I'm going to keep picking Wout. I think he was my pick last year, and I think the year before, too. So I got to keep going with it, man. Right?
That was good.
Until something happens.
I think that all of us hope that Lauren Swick wins so that we can actually see the jersey next year, and it's just not left in Wout and Vanderpool's closet as they go and do other things.
So yeah, I agree with that on the Wout standpoint. Do you think Matthew's got another year in him?
Yeah, but I just have a feeling that, especially starting next year, you know, the whole fascination with mountain biking, one is because I think he really likes it, but two, it's his best chance at a medal, at an Olympic medal. So we're starting to come back up to that. It'll be 2000, you know, you're going into the 2018, 2019 season, then 2020, you have the Olympics again. So he's got a couple seasons to really dial in cross-country mountain biking, on a whim, he's already, you know, right behind Nino Scherter, so he doesn't have a ton of dialing to do. And it's just like, how much does that play into what he wants to do as far as cyclocross is concerned?
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Okay, did we want to do any more emails, or are we just going to continue on with the picks, Bill?
Let me look at the lesson plan here, see where we're at.
While he's digging into that one, Scott, let's take the over-under bet. What's the time on this one? 65 minutes? How many laps are they going to do? 10? A dozen?
The men always ride the allotted amount of time.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to bring this up for the women's race as well, but they're going 65.
It's only ever the women's race plus short.
Right.
Oh, yeah. I think they'll be something in there. 64, 5, 6, something like that.
All
right. For sure.
All
right,
I was going to say that should be the tiebreaker, but we all had different picks. So
we have a really good letter from a friend and contributor of the podcast, Maria Larkin, about Sané Kant and her team, which it looks like she's on the same team as Vanderpool, but technically she isn't, so that's why she didn't switch bikes along with them. She's on the in that same organization. She's like on the U23 team. It's the men's team, and then her, which is sort of odd. It's sort of funny if you actually go to We were laughing, but in the Super Rookie podcast green room, we had to share their green room this week, which was a little uncomfortable.
Yeah, it was.
Those
guys
weird.
Never clean up after themselves.
They don't. They don't. Yeah. They, you know,
it's like a regular swamp again and again. That whole swamp again thing.
Yeah, just how they eat all those Doritos, I have no idea.
I don't know.
Yeah, and the milk. What was the deal with the milk duds? I didn't get it. But go ahead.
Odd. I did like that it had the passwords for little guy's neighbor's Wi-Fi on the wall.
So yeah, that was helpful.
Written in crayon too.
If you want to see Sonicon's team, you can go to Ico Enertherm Baobank. So that's IKOENERTHERM Baobank BEOBANK.BE. And that'll pull up that team. And yeah, you can look at the boy band pictures with Sane leading the way. It's kind of entertaining. But
on that note,
yes.
This team.
Yeah.
Whoever, and I'm looking at the English translation page, not auto-translated, by the way, but their English page, and it does say that Sonicon puts the World Cup in his pocket.
Oh, well, good. That's all right.
There's the news.
I think someone did some cut and pasting there without proofreading.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So your answer to Maria's question is...
She's on the other team. What? We don't know why. That's why. But yeah.
Who yeah. Knows? We don't know the exact specifics, but you can go look at the pictures. It's kind of fun.
But the pictures are fun.
Right.
And I mean, I understand the team ranking and how you would want her on there instead of. So I guess since they have to be a UCI cyclocross team, they have to have a woman on the team, and it's Alvarado who's actually listed as their woman and not Sonicon. So I don't know. I mean, maybe there's some other sponsorship agreements she has that don't work out with. I don't know. We don't know. Someday we'll get to the bottom of that. All right. After I
when we have Sonicon on the show,
threw on the podcast breaks there. Let's get back to our our picks.
All right, let's pick our since we started with Elite Men. Let's pick.
Oh, also,
our elite
wait before
women.
Before we do that, I do want to apologize to Elliot because he had this great email that I missed last week following Nationals with a ton of really really good questions and observations there that
but it's only an hour and a half show, so yeah, you can only do so much.
So we're not going to touch on them at all?
Nope. We're going to move on to the rest of our world's picks.
All right, so we're going to do the elite women's race. David,
we can have
you go first.
I'm just going to keep interrupting you. We'll have a Q&A. Yeah. We'll have a Q&A letters edition coming up here soon.
At the end of the season.
That sounds good. We can throw that in there. It'll be good. It'll be a good look back onto CS.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right, continue.
David, you go first this time.
Okay, so...
Elite women.
Yeah, and, you know, my pick for my heart, similar to Vandahar and the men, is always Katarina Nash, but I just can't put her on the podium today. Here we are in third place, giving up the jersey, is Sonicon. In second place, Ms. Mariana Voss comes back. And yes, this is the year indeed where the top step is stepped upon by Katie Compton.
Wow. That's good, Bill.
All right. Here's what's going to happen. We're looking at Valkenburg.
Wait a minute, Bill. Are you doing these as we're speaking about it? You haven't prepped these at all, have you?
I have a system. I have a process.
In other words, you're right.
I don't like to cloud my process with any
preparation.
Forethought. You say preparation, I say forethought.
All right, hit us.
Valkenburg, mountain bikers course, successful rides in the past in World Cups at Valkenburg on your third step of the podium. Italy's own Eva Leckner.
I like her.
Nice.
Second place breakout ride at Valkenburg last year, I believe also a second place from the United States of America, Caitlin Keogh. On your top step, Catherine FM Copton. This is the year, David. I'm with you. I'm picking her as well. This is going to be the year.
Scotty D, you writing these down?
Yes, I am.
Oh, good. Sané
Kant, not in the mix.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's quite different than what I have. So my top three, I'm going to go. I agree with you, Bill. I think she rides really well at this course, has had a great season, and can put it all together. I'm going to go with Katie Keogh in third place on the world's podium. Second place, I'm going to take Mariana Voss. I think what she did last week makes me worried. But I don't think anybody is going to have enough in the end for Sané Kant, and I think she's going to repeat as elite women's champion. There we go. Thoughts?
All right. I like it.
All right. All right.
Book it.
I will be rooting for Katie Compton with every fiber of my being. I just think there's just a lot of variables. A lot of things have to fall into place. They could, and she could have a great race, and she could ride away from the whole field and win by a minute. I'm going to go with Kant. I think she's riding really well, and I think she's ready, and I think she still has stuff to prove. So, okay. You guys ready to move on? Or Bill, any questions, or just keep going?
Let's keep going.
All right. U23 men. I will go first this time since you guys went first. I'm going with my podium. This is a tough podium to pick. I'm picking in third place, friend of the pod, Jens Dekker. Got to do it. This is it, man. He's going to get on the podium in third place. Right in front of him is going to be Pidcock. And I'm picking, after the showing this weekend, I'm going to go with Eli Easerbeet to take the win in the men's U23 World Champions. All right. David, go next.
Yeah.
U23 men.
U23 men, I had a really similar showing to you. I just had a difference in the 1-2. I have Jens Dekker, friend of the pod, one of our favorite viewers, on the third step. Eli Easerbeet's taking second place. And Mr. Tom Pidcock will be standing again this year on the top step.
Good pick. Can't argue with that.
I'm similar but different.
good.
I think I just have to, you know, for unity's sake, I also will pick Jens Dekker in third place. I mean, that's what I picked previously when I was going through and writing all these down. Jens Dekker in third place
yesterday when you were going over this.
yeah. And then again this morning when he checked through it to double check. And
I'm going with Joris Nieuwenhuis in second place, and Pidcock on the top step, and Ellie Easerbeet having another, I don't know if it's going to be tires this time or what, but isn't going to be able to come through and get that world championship.
All right.
So Dekker,
all right,
Dekker, Nieuwenhuis, and Pidcock.
Good pick. I like the Nieuwenhuis pick. That's a good one.
Didn't have enough in my little notes here. I didn't have enough vowels left to write that one down. So
just U's and E's. Come on.
A couple of I's and E's.
All right. And a really tough one to pick. U23 women. David, you go first.
Surprising everyone on the third step is going to be Ms. Emma White. And then in the second step, Celine Dion del Carmen Alvarado, and winning it will be Ms. Evie Richards.
Nice.
I really would love to see Katie Klaus there. I just don't think it is quite there yet.
Yeah, I think she's maybe a year away or something. I'll go next so Bill has more time. I got... I went not too far away from you, but I picked in third place. I picked Alvarado. I think I've been watching her all year and very impressed by what she's doing. I think she's gonna take third place. I'm going in second place with Verdonshot. I think she's been riding okay all year. I think she's got a little something to prove, and I think she's gonna ride well and do well. But I don't think any of them will have enough for Evie Richards, who I think is just riding out of her mind right now, is incredibly talented, is one of my favorite riders to watch, and I think she'll take the overall for the U23 women to Evie Richards. So, Bill.
Yeah, Anna Marie Verse, she's elite now, right?
Yes.
I believe so.
Yeah. All right. She's not going to win then.
No.
See what the prior preparation does for you?
Well, you didn't know. She wasn't even on your radar. I'm using
not in the U23s.
Prior knowledge.
Not in the U23.
I'm going. I may pick exactly what one of you all picked. But my our favorite Dutch rider, Celine Del Carmen Alvarado, in third place.
Yeah.
Yeah. Emma in second, and Evie winning it.
Oh yeah, you did. You kind of did a combination of David and I.
Yeah,
I had Verdonshot in there. Emma, all right, cool.
Emma, I'd love to see her win it though.
I would love to see her.
Not be disappointed in seeing Evie or Emma win that one. I think that'd be awesome.
Yeah,
I would. And yeah, I mean, I would love.
You
to
mentioned
see
from
Evie
the Netherlands. I thought Celine was from Canada, wasn't she?
Yeah.
What's your deal with the Canada things?
Celine Dion.
Yeah. Thank you.
Oh, jeez. David, what's the seven steps from Kevin Bacon? David has seven steps to Canada for every
Canadian I'll tell you mixer. What.
Canadian bacon?
Seven steps to Canada.
Yeah, given some politics, I'm always about 7 steps from Canada.
6 degrees of Canadian bacon.
Six degrees of Canadian bacon.
I think we're on to something.
Oh, we got a new game. We're going to have to come up with one every single week now. All right, guys. Well, I think those are some good picks. We'll see how we did overall once we have all the race. What are you guys doing? I'm watching at the shop. We're projecting worlds up on the wall. If there is anyone local and they want to come, just shoot me an email. Or get me on the Twitter sphere or something, and I'll give you directions. You can.
What do you have against people traveling to come?
Only well, they can travel as far as they.
You building a wall around the shop or something there, Scotty D?
I think the junior men start at 5 a.m. though, so you know that's quite an ask. Bill, what are you doing
We did talk. We didn't make predictions around the junior men, but we do need to put it in here. We have high hopes, and we're waking up extra early to watch our junior men and friends of the podcast. Some of our best viewers are the Americans. So, we'll be keeping an eye out for you guys. And
Alex Morton and Lane Maher will be watching you guys. So
we've got our eyes on you.
Bill, what are you doing for Worlds?
Just before, you know, because I think it is worth mentioning, especially after our long discussion about who did or did not make the men's worlds teams. One of the names that is not on that list, Curtis White, nice article on him this week about why he decided. And he was one that did opt out of going to worlds because he is working on his senior thesis instead. So this will be the first worlds that he missed. Definitely up there in the standings and a worthy pick, and had an invite to go and turned it down to finish up his schoolwork. So I think that's a pretty cool decision on his point.
I agree. You know, I agree. Yeah. That's classy.
But yeah, so worth pointing out there. I am going to be hosting a viewing party, and we're going to do some commentary over top of the broadcast. Me and fellow wide-angle podium commentator Taylor Jones will be down at the Rafa pop-up in Washington, D.C., in Georgetown. If you're up early, come on down and join us. We're going to Watch the men's race live at 9 a.m. And then after that, we are going to replay the women's race from Saturday and do that as well with commentary on top of that. So should have some coffee, maybe cool. maybe a little food, and then you can go and buy a gillet or something.
There you go. Some frites.
Yeah.
David, what are you doing? You coming to the shop, or are you doing your own thing?
You know what? I am torn. I maybe Saturday I'll probably be at Fraser Bicycle and working at getting the shop open early, at least for the 9 o'clock race. And then Sunday I may be coming your way, Scotty D. We'll have to see. Because, you know, after the other thing I can do is sit at home, watch the first three laps, and still go out for my normal ride at 9:30 in the morning. And not have missed anything.
Yeah, true. True.
Yeah, it may be all decided by then.
Exactly. Right.
Wout would have run away with it at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
You watch. And if
not
get
Lars
in touch
at that point, yeah.
Or Lars. If people want to get in touch with you, Bill, social media, what's the best way to do it?
On social media, you can go to @CXHairs on Twitter. Or Instagram or Venmo. We got another donation on Venmo. Thank you, Sean. Very nice of you. CXHairs.com. Most important one right now, though, go check out the YouTube channel. That is youtube.com/CXHairs. Oh, you know what else it is? Cross
new URL.
Crosshairstelevision.com. Yeah. Go look at
nice.
That.
Nice. Nice. David, what about you?
You can find me at Mr. David Palin on the Twitter and on the Instagram.
All right, and you can find me at Scott Diedenbach at Bike Shop CX on Twitter or at Cyclocross.net on Twitter. And if you would like to send us tech questions to the Bike Shop CX podcast, you can send them to bikeshopshow@gmail.com. We've got tons of tech questions this week, David, so we got some stuff to cover. So,
and I've been lining up some stuff. I've been talking to people, Scotty D, that we'll be talking to about when we get to our gravel grinding stuff.
David's moving and shaking. So,
yeah.
All right. All right. Well, that sounds good, gents.
Speaking
and,
of shaking,
you guys have a great...
did you hear my dog?
Is that your dog? What kind of chain you have on that thing? Like some
this
big, like...
He's so violent with his enormous head.
All right, guys. We'll have a great Worlds, and I'll be looking for you on Twitter, probably.
All my picks are right.
And I win.
Bye.
Bye, guys. Bye.